AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us, wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school, you're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Welcome to Hello Somebody, a production of the Black Effect Podcast Network and iHeartMedia, where we rage against the machine, where we raise our voices against injustice and stand up for justice, where we embrace hope and joy with an optimism for a brighter, more just future. Each week, I'll be dropping knowledge, whether it's a solo episode from me or a hearty discussion with esteemed guests doing great things in spaces and places of politics, entertainment, social justice, and beyond. We get real, baby. I mean, really real. We get honest. We get up close and personal for you. Yes, you. Because everybody is somebody. Before we begin, I want to give a special shout out to my team. Thank you, Sim, Tiffany, Sam, and the team over at Good Juju Studios, Erica England, Pepper Chambers, the hot one, and my social media team.
Hello, somebody. This is yours truly. So good to be back with you again, family. We've got some special days coming up. We know that we are approaching the holidays. Yes, we are, where some of us are going to take carte blanche to just eat. I know we are, but after you do that, don't beat yourself up. Just exercise afterwards. Do better between Thanksgiving and Christmas and then New Year's, and then we're gonna start this cycle all over again. We got some ups and downs and turnarounds, but we are here, and boy are we here today. We have the honor of speaking with and spending some time today with a ground shaking talent. She is a talent. Yes, she is. Young, Black, and gifted. Y'all know what I'm saying about that? She definitely puts a little extra on her ordinary. She is a poet, and she has been appointed as the Poet Laureate of the great state of Alabama. Go, Bama! I'm talking about the one and only Ashley M. Jones. Ashley, it's such a pleasure to have you with us on Hello Somebody today.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Now, what is a Poet Laureate? I mean, people hear that all the time. They hear poems read, you know, during presidential occasions, and a lot of people know poetry and they know poets too, poets that they love, like a Langston Hughes, you know, for example, or Maya Angelou, or the Raven poet. I'm blanking on his
Edgar
name.
Allan Poe.
Yeah, Edgar Allan Poe. How could I forget? That was one of the first poems I ever learned in school. But yeah, Edgar Allan Poe, and so many others I'm missing. But very few people know what a poet laureate is. Please tell us what that is and so, how chosen.
Yes. So a poet laureate can be over a number of different areas. So you can either be the poet laureate of the United States. And our current poet laureate is Joy Harjo. She's our first Native American poet laureate. You can be the poet laureate of your state. So like myself, I represent Alabama. You can also be a poet laureate of a county, a city, a library system, anything. And basically what that person does as poet laureate is we represent the art form of poetry. We are the ambassador for poetry for whatever our constituency is. So in my case, the state of Alabama. And what I am tasked to do is to create spaces for people to enjoy poetry, to be introduced to it, to write it, to hear it, to be impacted by it. And I also represent poetry outside of my state. So whenever I leave Alabama, I am the person who brings the Alabama spirit of poetry with me wherever I go. So that's basically what we do. We're like a...
So you're like ambassadors.
Yeah. It's a government office without having any real power. So,
well, I don't know. I think as a laureate, you have the power to heal, the power to uplift, the power to make people think differently. Mm-hmm. That is, in fact, what poetry does. It goes deep. And so, yeah. But I understand what you're saying. But I want to push back on that and say I do believe as a poet laureate, you have lots and lots of power. The kind of power that people might not necessarily see. But they can feel it, right? They
exactly. Feel it.
And what brought you to the art form of poetry, and how were you chosen or selected as poet laureate for this great state of Alabama?
Yeah, so I came to poetry when I was 7 years old. I was in the second grade, and I was already really into reading and writing and creating art. My parents created an environment for all of us, their children, to be really immersed in those sorts of pursuits. So I was reading when I was about 3, and that's what I did for fun. I read, I played, I made things, I played with my dolls, I watched public television. That's what I did. So in the second grade, there was an assignment given to memorize something and then bring it into class and recite it. And so I had been reading a book called Honey, I Love by Eloise Greenfield. And she, of course, was an amazing children's book author. She really did a lot for Black people, all people, but Black people in specific, making sure that we had, as children, images of ourselves to look at and books to read that reflected us. So this particular book is a book of poetry. And it really impacted me because it had so many images of Black people. Every page you turned, there was a drawing of a Black girl or a Black boy or a Black woman or a Black man. And the language itself was very Black, which was amazing to me as a quote unquote proper speaking child, you know, being in the Deep South. And I didn't have that, you know, swing to my language like so many other people in my family, my, you know, aunts, grandmothers, all those people had. I always yearned for something, you know, to make me feel more connected to that. And so this book was one doorway in. So I chose this poem called Harriet Tubman in that book to memorize and to recite. And so when the day came, my mom came and dressed me up as Harriet Tubman. And at the time I still had my tonsils and adenoids and they were very enlarged. And so I was a very phlegmy kind of sounding child, hated the sound of my own voice. Generally a little, you know, insecure, shy as a little girl. But when I got up to recite this poem, I remember, you know, saying the first few lines. It starts, Harriet Tubman didn't take no stuff, wasn't scared of nothing neither. Didn't come in this world to be no slave and wasn't going to stay one either. And as I said those as I said those words, I really felt just a sense of power and confidence that I hadn't felt before. And so from that day forward, I kept writing poetry. I had a notebook already that I used as a quote unquote spy journal, because I also loved Harriet the Spy. So I had all my little spy entries. But in that notebook, I started to write poems, and I kept doing it. And I, you know, studied at the Alabama School of Fine Arts from 7th to 12th grade. That's where I teach now, actually. And then I went on to undergrad and grad school. I've just been very involved in poetry forever. So that sort of answers the second part of the question, how did I come to be chosen? First, I had to live a life of poetry. You know I'm only 31, but I've had a lot of years in the game. You know, I've been doing this for a very long time. And I just became very involved when I got back to Alabama after doing my graduate work in Miami, and just, you know, plugged in to everything that was going on. And so people in the community, because of, you know, all the things that I was doing, felt moved to nominate me to be Poet Laureate. After those nomination packets were sent in to the organization that that shepherds the process, they're called the Alabama Writers Cooperative, I was judged against, I think, three or four other nominees, and I was chosen. I was selected unanimously to be the official nominee. And then I went before the membership of the Writers Cooperative, and they voted me as the selection. And very soon, the governor will officially commission me. So that is the process.
That is just beautiful. And for you to say, you know, as a 31-year-old, certainly to hear someone say, I got a lot of time in the game. You know, you just really got here. But it is because you have, poetry found you. In a way, you know, there's a saying that says what you're seeking is seeking you. And as you were seeking to find, what did you say? Your aunts and your grandma had that swing in their voice. You know, you were trying to find your swing. And since you were seeking that swing was seeking you, and it just came in the form of poetry. I mean, how beautiful is that? Yeah, I often, you know, I teach too, and I love the world is my classroom now, but I was a college professor at a community college, and I would often say to my students on numerous occasions that what you are seeking is seeking you. Because sometimes when you're just starting out on whatever it is, whatever journey you're on in your life, whether it's professional or personal or a little bit of both, you can get stuck sometimes being really unsure about what your next move can and should be. Mm-hmm. But what you are seeking is seeking you, and your life story so far, because you're just getting started, is a really big example of that. You know, I have a quote here from you, and I'm quoting you, Ashley. No, it's beautiful. It says, when I was a little girl growing up in Birmingham, Alabama, I made a plan for my life as a poet. And part of the plan, a big, big dream, was to serve as Alabama State Poet Laureate. You said those words, and my God, you made it happen and selected unanimously. But it wasn't just you sat around and dreamed that. You actually put in the sweat equity to make what you were seeking seek you. And I think even beyond poetry, that is something that anybody can grasp onto, because the unknown can be, you know, I mean, people dream all the time. They dream big dreams. They hope a lot. I believe that hope is a great motivator. But how important is it to take your dream and then to put forth the action steps to make that dream a reality?
It's incredibly important. I mean, I have been very focused from a very early age, and I know that's not everybody's story. It just so happens that I was created to be very laser focused, you know, from day one. But as far as dreams go, the dreaming part is extremely important. You have to imagine those things that we want to happen. You have to imagine the kind of life that you want, but the imagining alone can't make the life happen. You then have to find those actionable steps that you can take to make those goals become a reality. And that's where a lot of times community comes into play. You know, if I had not had, starting out from my own parents, if I hadn't had parents who supported my artistic endeavors and my dreams to be an artist, it would have been a lot harder to figure out, okay, what are the steps I can take? Because one of those steps would have been defying my family, you know, but I didn't have that step. My family supported me, and I was able to go to schools that taught me the skills needed to know how to write in the way that I wanted to. Now, of course, again, there's a lot of it that is given to you. I believe all of us have a gift. So the gift to write is something that I believe was given to me. The schooling part of it has a lot to do with the practical things. How do I format a poem? What has been written before? What's the history of it? These things are all necessary. And then, of course, learning from others, you know, what steps they took, meeting mentors and having them tell me, this is what my path was. Here is how I went from, you know, wanting to write poems to having books published. Here's how I went from being an undergraduate student to completing my graduate work, all of these things. And also the warnings that they give you are very important. For me as a Black woman, it was really imperative for me to listen to those Black female mentors of mine who told me, it's great that you have these goals. We need you to have these goals. We need you, you know, to be this person you say you want to be. We need that in our community. But just know that there will be obstacles along your way. There will be people who want to tear you down or people who won't understand you. Yes. There will be times where you face discrimination in all facets of your life, the workplace, your personal life, whatever. And that was also very important for me as I set these goals into movement, as I went to school, as I studied other poets, as I learned the publishing process. And I'm very open too with others about my journey, because growing up, so often we had authors to visit, or you know, read about authors. Whenever they were asked the very specific question, how do I do the thing that you're doing? There was never a specific answer. It was always, well, it takes time. It takes time doesn't help me understand how to submit my book, you know, to a press. Sure. So I am now trying to help others as they go on their journeys by just sharing, here's what happened to me. If somebody hadn't shared with me what they did, I don't know that I would know everything I know, you know, about the publishing world and moving through it. So
yeah, and it does take, I mean, it takes time is one aspect, but then you need something else on that, because it does, because you have to build. And it's beautiful. Do you think, well, no, I won't ask you that. Sometimes people either don't know how to share the steps, or don't want to share the steps, you know, or maybe a little bit of both. So it is beautiful that you are not, that you don't have a fear that somebody's necessarily going to take your place. I think everybody is unique. And I know you talk about the different voices that you like to celebrate everyone's voice. In that same vein, just as unique as our fingerprints, nobody's going to take your place. Nobody's going to take my place. There's enough sand on the beach for everybody. That's, and we often operate from a space of scarcity. Mm-hmm. And maybe that might be why some didn't share. And then maybe some just didn't know how to share what the steps are. Because some people just do, and then they're doing it in a very methodically orderly way. And then the universe comes and helps them through the rest of it. And they might not necessarily say, okay, here's step one, here's step two, here's step three. Mm-hmm. But it's beautiful, Ashley, that you, from your experiences, knew to pull that out so that you could be more of a help to the generation that's coming right beside you and also right behind you. So that's a beautiful thing. So speaking of everybody's voice, you know, how do we celebrate everybody's voice? What does that look like on a small scale, and then what may on a micro, and then also on a macro scale?
Well, I think a really important first step of celebrating everyone's voice is actually listening for your own voice and understanding that you have a voice that is valuable and worthy. And once you're operating under the assumption that my voice is mine, just like you were saying, nobody can take your spot. Once you understand that you are you, nobody else can be you, you know, and that what you have to say has meaning, you can then listen to others and hear their experience, hear their voice, and not feel threatened by it, not feel like it's a voice attacking your own personhood. You can say, wow, it's so great that you have a voice and I have a voice and we're all here together having voices. But I think we are, as a society, as a country, really still stuck on the honoring our own voices and understanding that the differences that we have are celebration worthy. It's not necessary to erase everyone for us to achieve empathy. In fact, that's the opposite, I think, process for achieving empathy. We have to fully understand ourselves and appreciate ourselves before we can listen with empathy and live in an empathetic fashion to honor everybody's voices. And part of that self-realization means understanding where we're complicit in systems that are silencing others. you know, and that's a hard thing to do. I understand that it's so necessary to do. You know, just speaking as a Black person, there's a lot of discomfort that we go through on a day-to-day basis. When we look at our history, we're carrying that history with us. If we are able to have that on our back every single day, then everyone else can do the work of putting something on their back too, you know, and figuring out what it is that's in their past that they're carrying that they might need to release, and understanding that their goodness doesn't become erased if they acknowledge the history as well.
That's exactly right. And we're definitely at a tumultuous time again, because history does repeat itself. And, you know, there was a point in time where, you know, Black people in particular have definitely been through this before. I mean, we have this whole debate about critical race theory, which all of these people are all up in a knot over something they really don't understand, number one. Number two, it is not taught in any K-12 school. It's barely taught in college unless you're taking some specialty, and they don't even get it. And, you know, to me, really what that pushback, that backlash reveals is that some in this country and some of our white sisters and brothers, family and friends, fear coming face to face with an aspect, a terrible aspect, a horrendous aspect of America's history. It's racist and anti-Black, !! History. So I see it as a lot less about teaching critical race theory as much as they don't want the real history of this country taught at all, period. They don't want to come face to face with it. So actually, I mean, you are so right. And you know, poetry in a way can get to those points and open up people's mind. It's kind of like how what the comedian does too.
Right.
I mean, they're a little more scathing in it, but comedians can attack issues in a way that may be hard to have a straight up conversation, and they have more creative license because they are comedians. I see poetry addressing the aspects of the human spirit and human nature in that way, albeit in a different form, but in that way. So speaking of addressing tough issues, you have a third collection of poems out, and this collection, right on time, I might add, Reparations Now, a book of poems about reparations. So I think you ask a question, what is the price of a life, a stolen culture, a stolen heart? Let's talk about your book on reparations, your book of poems on reparations. Why now? What motivated you to do it? And what has been your experience on this particular path so far?
Well, this third book really has taken me places I did not expect to go. It has taken a life of its own, which that's what the poems do. I have always been very aware that it's not about me. I'm receiving the poems and the poems do what they must. You know, I'm merely the vessel for them. But this third book explores, as you said, reparations in the political sense, but also in the personal sense. So there are poems like what I usually write, which are about history, because I am an educator. So I'm always trying to educate about what happened in this country. There's poems about that. There's poems about contemporary issues as well, because as you said, history repeats itself. But I would even take it a step further and say that there is really no, time is not real. You know, we're in a constant state of cyclical, you know, cyclical events. And in many ways, the conversation hasn't even begun. You know, like we're talking about, oh, we're post-racial now. I'm not. Some people are saying
no, we're not post-racial by any stretch of the imagination.
We are still really stuck in Reconstruction, honestly. We have not moved past that at all. So there's poems about that. And there's also poems that explore one's own personal need for repair, because as we know, reparations, the root word is repair. That's the thing that we're trying to do as a country. But we do need to start also within ourselves. So some of the pieces in here talk about my own repair journey. You know, and it can be from anything. There are relationships that we have, romantic or not, that we feel take something from us. And it was up to me during the process of writing this book to figure out how to make that repair happen for myself, with myself, by myself. A lot of the work that we have to do is with us. We can't always expect someone else to deliver our, you know, deliverance to us. Sometimes we have to do it ourselves. So that's what this book is about.
Well, read us. Let's grace us with one of your favorites from this collection.
Okay, I'll read what I'm now calling my greatest hit. I feel like I take this poem everywhere with me. So I'll read this one. I think it represents my point of view. And just to set it up a little bit, this poem does begin with an epigraph from Dr. King, who we know is the most like misquoted man in the world. You know, people are really interesting with the way that they remember his legacy. But I have a quote from him to open it. And this poem talks about this idea that I've come across in my travels across the country with my books. People who don't know that I'm from Alabama, because I don't really have an accent, they'll, you know, when I say, oh, I'm from Alabama, they'll say, oh my gosh, are you all right? Are you okay? And I'm like, well, yeah, like, why wouldn't I be okay? You know, we live in the same country. Whatever's happening to you is happening to me, or vice versa. Yes. You know, and there's no state where I'm not still a Black person facing the same issues.
Say that.
So, you know, people have this idea that somehow if you were above the Mason-Dixon line, it was just a magical place. You know, once the enslaved people made it across the line, oh, the troubles were over. There was nothing. But we know that's not true.
Nothing can be further from the truth.
At all. So this poem addresses that. And the title is sort of a little joke, too, because I also have found that everybody I've met anyway has a tie to Alabama. Somehow, some way, everybody's from here. Even if that tie becomes me when they meet me, there you have it. You have a tie.
Well, I mean, 90% of us, you know, Black folks from the South, and we all know why. So that might be true. Actually, that's hilarious. I'm going to use that now. I met Ashley, so I'm from Alabama, too.
That's right. So the poem is called okay. All Y'all Really From Alabama.
Okay, we're ready.
The straitjackets of race prejudice and discrimination did not wear only Southern labels. The subtle psychological technique of the North has approached in its ugliness and victimization of the Negro, the outright terror and open brutality of the South. Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Why We Can't Wait. This here, the cradle of this here nation. Everywhere you look, roots run right back South. Every vein filled with red dirt, blood, cotton. We the dirty words you spit out your mouth. Mason-Dixon is an imagined line. You can theorize it or wish it real, but it's the same old ghost, see-through, benign. All y'all from Alabama. We the wheel turning cotton to make the nation move. We the scapegoat in a land built from death. No longitude or latitude disproves the truth of founding fathers' sacred oath. We hold these truths like dark snuff in our jaw. Black oppression's not happenstance, it's law.
Not happenstance, it's law. Amen to that. I was taking in the moment. I was feeling all of that. And it is so true. And again, you know, to go back to something we were just saying, working up, and I didn't know you were going to pick that particular poem, but a lot of folks do not want to face the ugly part. You know, there's some good in America's history, still a very young nation when you compare our nation to nations that have existed for thousands of years, cultures that have been around for thousands of years. In our young history, a lot of horrendous things have been done to people, continuing to be done to people. But the most horrendous of them all is the unique experience of Africans and then their descendants, the American descendants of slaves. I know now teachers take it, and academics and people and social scientists are a little more careful to say the enslaved,
right?
Not to take away the agency of the person that was enslaved, because they didn't ask to be enslaved, but they were enslaved. So saying the difference between saying slaves and enslaved is a condition that was created by others. But your poem just really hit the nail on the head, I think, about of so much that we are enduring right now. There's a backlash in this country. It really is. And it is cyclical. And, you know, Dr. Cornel West, when he talks about, he said, you know, the past is prologue. And as you laid it out, like, we never really, it doesn't repeat itself. It just keeps going and going until it's back to almost where it began. And we got a reckoning of the human consciousness, the human spirit, and really what kind of nation we want to be. And in order to know what kind of nation we want to be, we got to accept who we are. You know, James Baldwin, you're making me think of James Baldwin, one of the greatest novelists of the 20th century. Yep. And one of his quotes, know from whence you came. If you know from whence you came, there's virtually nowhere you cannot go. And another quote, he said, everything that is faced cannot be changed, but nothing can be changed until it is faced.
Right.
And that's what I see in that poem.
Yeah.
You're daring us to face some things.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I don't want anybody to be able to escape from the truth in there. I mean, when we look at even the founding of the country, for people to say that we started on such, wholesome ideal. Yeah. Yes. Like for who? Like not for people who looked like me at all, because as they were signing away, you know, the documents, who was fixing dinner and, you know, didn't want to be in America and et cetera, et cetera. My people had been brought. Right. My people were the ones that, built so much of this country with no thanks whatsoever. And really were met with just horrendous, as you said, horrendous treatment. And for us as Black children to learn about this history, you know, for someone to say, well, we shouldn't teach our children X, Y, and Z. Well, what are we teaching the Black children? What are we learning when we sit in a classroom or when we go to a Black History Month program or whatever, and we learn about slavery? And I'm so glad now that teachers are reframing, using different language for it, because instead of making Black history equal to slavery only,
sure,
it's important to understand that there were people who did the enslaving, who did the raping, pillaging, all of that.
Come on.
It wasn't right. That we, as you said, we didn't say, oh, I really would love to be stolen away from my home. Right. So happy to be someone who's enslaved. No. Someone actively did this. Humans did this to other humans. That's the other part.
Yeah.
And a lot of systems. My research. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And a lot of my research, when I'm looking at these things that have been done, like there's a poem in this book about Mary Turner, who was lynched in Georgia a very horrific way. And the poem in here actually is paired with Stephon Clark, who was murdered by police in a horrific way in 2018. Their death dates are almost 100 years apart exactly to the day.
Yeah.
But looking at those stories and those histories, the thing that always sort of makes me stop is to understand that it's human beings who are doing this to other human beings.
That's right.
That's the part we need to understand. It's not that we can say, oh, these monsters did that. It wasn't humans. Like, no, it was people were doing it. So we have to understand that there's not much separating us from any other person. There's a very thin line between you not doing something bad and you doing something bad. And we need to be actively attentive to those things inside ourselves, like our biases, which can grow into a desire to create harm for others. So anyway.
Or we can reverse that and have a desire to do good because of what we have learned.
Exactly.
Deconstruct our construction. Another thing I talked about, I learned from one of my favorite professors, and I carried that on into my classroom to implore all of us, even those of us who are conscious, because you need people to be conscious to change. But you're constantly, if you are conscious minded, trying to deconstruct your construction in a way that gets you closer to enlightenment.
That's right.
Gets you closer to understanding and want to be part of the good of humanity, because it can go either way.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates.
Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Let's end with Mary Turner. Maybe people need to know her lynching was horrendous. Mary Turner, if I recall, she was pregnant. Is that correct?
Yes.
She was pregnant. Well, let's go there. Let's go there, Ashley. Thank you.
No problem. And as I'm turning to this page, I will say too something that I've been trying to say more and more to anyone who will listen. The fight for liberation really will help all of us to eliminate Amen. White supremacy. Also helps white people.
That's right.
For everybody.
That's exactly right.
That's a piece that people forget. It's not just we want this so we can, you know, leave y'all in the dust. We want this so we can all be able to live without the blood and the heaviness of all of this. So I will read this poem about Mary Turner, and it does include some information at the beginning of the piece that gives the historical context. And I will say this poem is meant to be read in a pair with the other, it's two sonnets about Mary Turner and Stephan Clark. So I'll just go straight through them and you'll hear the different title once I go to Stephan's.
Okay.
Mary, don't you weep, or Mary Turner resurrected. When Mary Turner threatened to press charges for the wrongful lynching of her husband in Brooks County, Georgia, on May 19th, 1918, she was strung upside down. Her clothes were burned off, and her unborn baby was cut from her womb and stomped to death. Turner was shot repeatedly, and she and her baby were buried close by their murder site. Like all resurrections, it began with blood, dirt, unending light. The Georgia moss punctuated by camellias, their white hurt stretching across Brooks County. No blight to stain their leaves, just the ash falling bloody from Mary's emblazoned womb. Her baby, a fire, its single soft cry still igniting the air. Could it be that even this baby, even this one-breathed angel was crucified to save us all? Maybe. Maybe Mary and her baby flew up from death in sweaty Georgia, her shallow grave shaken loose. Finally free, resurrected. It turns out all along hell was earth. What else could she name that rock covered in leaf and loam? Not loving, not hopeful, and most certainly not home. Stephan, don't you moan, or to serve and protect. 22-year-old father of two, Stephan Clark, was shot 20 times on March 19th, 2018 by Sacramento police in his grandmother's backyard. The gun police claimed to have seen him carrying was his iPhone. Is there a police protocol for grace? For the moment between show us your hands and shoot. That night, policeman, servant of the gun, did you give space for a man's innocence to bloom? Despite the loaded weight of your finger on the trigger, despite how the night painted that man bigger, made him a giant with a fireball in his hands, despite the loud explosion of your fright. Innocence is for softer things, an open, empty palm, a blooming flower, a spread of rocks becoming sand. Silly civilization. You thought we'd evolved beyond abuse of power. But again, a pruning. What a flower you were, Stefan, and what holiness in your body opening, petaled in the white helicopter light. This, an Armageddon of bullets, flowers, stars, stripes.
Oh my, Stefan and Mary, and you said almost 100 years apart to the day. There's something spiritual about that too, in the spiritual realm. Wow. All I can say, I mean, you really got me really deep in thought right now and heavy, and we all should be heavy about injustice, right? Because Dr. King, what happens to one directly happens to us all indirectly. And your point about if we have this reckoning, and the reckoning doesn't have to be, it should be, a reckoning can be good. If we have this reckoning, this realization, this opening up about what has happened in this country and who it has happened to for the benefit of, we all will come out better on the other side. Oh my God, Ashley M. Jones, I understand why Alabama made you, why you earned, worked so hard to be the ambassador of poetry in your great state. Reparations Now is the title of your latest collection of poems. And where can one find your poetry for purchase?
You can purchase Reparations Now wherever books are sold. If you want to buy directly from the press, it's from Hub City Press. So if you search, if you go to my website, which is ashleymjonespoetry.com, there is a very convenient link you can click to go directly to their site. But you can order from your local independent bookstores, from your non-independent bookstores. I'm carried everywhere, or I'm able to be ordered anywhere. If you shop at the very big box store, you can shop there and it'll come to you. But yeah, wherever you buy books, you can get my book.
Oh, that is so beautiful. And are you on social media?
I am on there. I will say I'm a high school teacher. I'm a teacher of many levels, but I teach high school. So I try to keep it pretty private because you know how students are.
Oh yeah, I do. So anything for your books on social media, or people should just go to your website?
It might take a while to accept.
Okay. Well,
Website is great. Yeah. Or you can find it on Twitter and Instagram, but again, website's good.
No, I get it. No, social media can be a very dangerous place sometimes. It's not friendly at times. Well, Ashley, it has certainly been an honor to have you with us on Hello Somebody. Keep shining the light and speaking a truth that is enriching and also piercing to the soul. That is what you do. Thank you so very much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Hello Somebody is a production of iHeartRadio and the Black Effect Network. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't give Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.